Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is so good to be with you on this Friday. We are absolutely loaded. I mean, absolutely loaded. There is so much show today. I could probably slam two full shows into one show. So let's not waste any time with it. Let's get right at it. All right, now, normally I lead the program with the biggest story. I'll talk about that. I'll throw in some highlights. We get that thing rolling. Today, I'm not going to do it like that. Today, I'm not going to say Jack. Today, I am just going to play this.
Mariota gives it to Henry. Henry bounces it outside. 5, 10, 15, stiff arm. 20, 25, 30, 40, stiff arm. 50, 40, 30. He's on his feet. Big chase. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Titans, 99 yards! The longest run in franchise history. And the Titans are up by 11.
Derek freaking Henry. Titans freaking radio. There are touchdown runs. And then there is that touchdown run. I mean, really, it's hard to even find the words to describe something like that. At some point, I should probably tell you the final score of that game, but it really doesn't matter. In fact, if you don't mind, can you run that back one more time?
Henry bounces it outside. 5, 10, 15, stiff arm. 20, 25, 30, 40, stiff arm. 50, 40, 30. He's on his feet. Big chase. 20, 15, 10.
Makes me laugh every single time because there's nothing more glorious nor more humiliating than a good stiff arm. I mean, I'll be honest, there are a bunch of other topics that I could talk about today. I've got four interviews, I've got a packed show, but I've got no problem clearing the deck and talking about that run for 3 hours because a run like that does not come along very often. Let me break this down very quickly. What is the best part about that run? Is it when there's a little bit of contact at the line of scrimmage and for a moment it seems like he might be stopped for a 2-yard gain? Or is it when he cuts out to the left and he picks up that first down? That was nice. Get the offense some breathing room. Get it off your own goal line. It's a good start to a drive. But then it quickly escalates. A.J. Boye, a Pro Bowl corner, and by all accounts, a solid human being, comes up to make a stop and he regrets it immediately. Henry hits him with a stiff arm that lifts him up off the ground and drives him back 5 yards. An all-pro corner being treated like a gnat. Get the hell off me, AJ. Have some. Get off me. And then, sure, yeah, Henry got a piece of Boye's face mask. Exactly what is your point? Are you looking for a flag there? I wasn't. I doubt Boye was either. He was looking for the ground because his feet were leaving it. And before you call that stiff arm disrespectful, understand that it wasn't. It was actually very respectful because Henry picked this cat back up and put him back on the ground when he was done with him. If Henry wanted that to be worse, it would have been. He would have left A.J. Boye in a hole around the 20-yard line. If he wanted to, he would have. And then the run would have been great if it stopped right there. But it didn't. It only got better because somehow, some way, after chucking Boye aside, he finds another gear and he picks up speed. Linebacker Leon Jacobs was next to make a huge mistake. He also tried to tackle Henry. Big, big mistake. Now, he's a rookie from Wisconsin. So that tells us a couple of things. Number one, he's smart. He's got heart. He's not going to go down without a fight. Unfortunately, Derrick Henry ragdolled him out of the way after about 5 yards of scuffling with him. Look, I admire Leon's heart and his grit for trying to take down that monster, but it just was not happening. Then Miles Jack took his shot, and that went about as well as, well, every other shot went. It went horribly. He was on the wrong end of another Henry stiff arm. And just when it seemed like it was just Derrick Henry and the goal line, and there would not be any more stiff arms, there was one more. Because after the whole ordeal was over, Darren Revelle tweeted, quote, Please don't call that one of the best runs in NFL history. If you call it anything, call it one of the worst tackling jobs. To which the Titans team account responded with, and I quote, "Shut up, nerd."
Nerd!
In all caps, "Shut up, nerd."
Nerd!
Now that's the most vicious stiff arm of the entire night.
Nerd! Nerd!
They rolled up Ravel in a carpet and threw him off a bridge. And if that was the only thing that Henry did all night, it would have been legendary. But it wasn't. There was this.
Mariota in the gun. Gives it to Henry at left guard. Pounding and driving into the end zone. Touchdown, Titans!
That's a career night with those two scores. But that's not all. He also did this.
Give it to Henry at right guard. Moving forward. 10, 5, end zone! The Yulee Hornet! Touchdown, Titans! He is running all over his hometown team.
You know, at that point, I think I tweeted, somebody's got to pull this guy off of the Jags. At that point, he's had about as good a night as anybody could ever have. But wait, there was even more.
Going to give it to the big man. He comes back to the right. He's got the 50, the 45, the 40, the 35, the 30, the 25, the 20, the 15, the 10, the 5, the end zone. 54 yards. Derrick Henry, touchdown, Titans. He nearly took that one all the way to Franklin.
54 yards. He had a 99-yard score. This was against one of the alleged best defenses in the NFL. Like I said, I could talk about that run that night for all 3 hours. When it was all said and done, 238 yards, 4 touchdowns on only 17 carries. It's incredible. I'd say that those are video game numbers, but they're not. If you did that against one of your boys, he would have thrown the controller and unplugged the Xbox before you got to 200 yards in the game. As Deion Lewis said, quote, "They didn't want to tackle him. They're scared of him. They didn't want nothing to do with him today. He was on fire. They didn't want to tackle him, and he was running hard, aggressive, and physical. It was fun to be a part of history," end quote. That must have been fun. Hey, but don't take it from me. Ask Jags safety, Tashawn Gibson, Jr. He said, and I quote, "I've never been a part of a guy running like that. I mean, it was like Little League out there. Every time he touched the ball, he was scoring, it felt like. He could have run for 300 on us today, if we're being honest. If I was his coach, I would have let him break the record," end quote. Man, Gibson. Gibson is a proud dude, a guy who plays with some serious physicality. He even said on this show how much it bothered him when the Titans out-toughed the Jags in the past. And now he's admitting they had no answers for this guy. He's saying they couldn't have done anything to stop him. He's saying that if he were the coach, he would have let this guy run for 3 bills. That is the ultimate sign of respect from an extremely proud guy. Now, there is one final topic about the night that Derrick Henry had and that run that he had that I want to get into. The inevitable comparisons to Marshawn Lynch. Now, let's go back. I want you to watch this one more time. Here is Derrick Henry.
Henry bounces it outside. 5, 10, 15, stiff arm, 20, 25, 30, 40, stiff arm, 50, 40, 30. He's on his feet. Big chase, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Titans, 99 yards! The longest run in franchise history!
No doubt, one of the best efforts and best runs I've ever seen in my life. No doubt about it. However, are you going to come up in here and tell me that it was as good or better than this?
Goes in motion right to left. Turn and handle into left side. Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his legs moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run. Lynch. 40. Pushes him at 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go. Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word. A 67-yard run. Marshawn Lynch. Unbelievable. He must have knocked 5 guys down on the way to the end zone. The beast is alive and well.
All right, so if there was a topic, if ever there was, or a lame Twitter poll, it would be this. Which run was better? I'll take your calls on that. And we could argue which was better. And we could do the entire hour on that. Let me make it simple for you, because we're not going to do that. Derrick Henry's run last night was awesome. It was not Marshawn Lynch. I know Henry's run was longer. Lynch's was better. More vicious, more violent, more amazing. Henry's run was incredible. One of the best I've ever seen. I'm not taking anything at all away from him. I'm just giving it back to the beast mode. I'm giving it back to Lynch. No run has ever been in that class, and I'm not sure any run will ever be in that class. That said, I never thought that I would see a run that I would even compare to Marshawn Lynch's. So even being in the conversation, even being nominated is an honor, and it's a great, great feather in this guy's cap. It's awesome. Just don't tell me it's better than Marshawn Lynch. Don't tell me it's as good as Marshawn Lynch. Nothing is. Nothing is. But they have themselves a night. I need an entire take for Jacksonville. Man, Jacksonville, how do I put this? How do I put this? What is a diplomatic way for me to put this? They're trash. Man, they're disappointing. It's been a long time since I've seen a team that disappointing in the NFL. So, what's a good way to start the weekend? We go into the weekend by talking soccer. Not only talking soccer, but by talking to the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. He was introduced as the new head coach on Tuesday. 44 caps with the men's national team, including two World Cups. First U.S. men's national team head coach to have played for the U.S. in a World Cup. 18-year professional career, captain of two European clubs. We are joined right now by the head coach of the U.S. men's national team, Greg Berhalter. Greg, it is so good to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Jim?
Good.
Nice to hear from you.
Good. Great to talk to you, Greg. Now, this is something that's been rumored for quite some time and then was finally made official on Tuesday. So first off, what have the last few days been like for you, and how does it feel to be the U.S. men's national team head coach?
Well, you know, the best way I can describe it is it's a tremendous honor. Having played for the country, I understand the importance of the team and understand where it fits in global soccer. But it also is a big responsibility, and I'm excited to get to work, excited to work with this group of players and see what we can achieve together.
Greg, I got to be honest, it's actually a little bit surreal to me because it feels like it was not that long ago that you were in Southern California and we were in the stands together watching our kids play Little League Baseball. But then at the same time, everybody knows how smart, focused, and hardworking you are. So let me ask you, does it feel at all surreal to you, or does this feel completely normal, like this was the plan all along?
I think when you make the transition from a player to the coach, from a player to a coach, you want to do your best, and you don't know exactly what's going to come. You know, my focus is on the daily, is on doing the best I can each and every day. And then things like this happen. You know, it is a great feeling and, again, a tremendous honor.
Greg Berhalter is my guest. I wonder about the process. Like, for instance, the job had been open for more than a year, and at least from the outside, it feels like you had done a really good job of shutting out the rumors and doing exactly what you just said, focusing on the daily. But when your name first started to be mentioned as a candidate, what was that like for you?
You know, it was flattering. You know, that's when it starts to be set in and say, hey, I may be a potential candidate for this job. You know, obviously a mentor of mine was the former coach, Bruce Arena. And, you know, to fill a role that he occupied is also an honor. But it was keeping the group focused, keeping my team focused. And, you know, we wanted to achieve a lot this season with Columbus. And it was, again, just focusing the group on what we can do today.
Greg Berhalter is my guest. All right, so you're from New Jersey, and as some people know, you're also the godson of Carl Yastrzemski. So you're still really young, but the soccer landscape in America has changed a lot since you were starting out at Union County Sport Club and then dominating at St. Benedict's in Newark. For example, MLS had not even started yet. So when you were playing in high school, what kind of a vision did you have for yourself as a career and as a player?
You know, I think it was one of those things where you just do it. You don't even think about it. I said I was really determined to be a professional, even though that route was seldom taken by American players. I wanted to go to Europe, and I just worked every day to get there. You know, it was something where you don't quite know what you're doing when you're doing it, and then somehow it works out.
Listen, going to Europe is one thing, but going when you went is another. For instance, you went to North Carolina, and then you left early to go play in Europe. That's a really big leap, a big step into the unknown. What was it like to make that decision, and why did you feel like that was the right one for you in the right time?
You know, I think it was all about – I'm a firm believer in, you know, a player needs to be continually challenged by games. And I felt at the time that college soccer wasn't challenging me anymore. And I had to take a new challenge. You know, thankfully, my college coach, Elmar Bolowicz, was very supportive of the move and urged me to go. And it was a case where I went to Holland, and all of a sudden the level was better, and I had to grow as a player, and I had to improve.
Greg Berhalter is my guest. So what about that experience? Specifically, going to play in the Netherlands, how different was that from what you had experienced prior to that? And then what was that like?
So it was amazing. What I'll say is that it was a very good time for Dutch soccer. And Dutch people are very thorough. They're very intelligent about speaking about the game. I felt like I was at college all over again in terms of soccer college. It was, you know, continued discussions about how the game should be played. And playing with the caliber of players there was really a great starting point for my career.
So, Greg, legend has it that you kept detailed notes from training sessions, even going back to your time in Holland. Knowing that, when did you first start thinking about coaching?
You know, I think it was something where I did start early on, just thinking about how to form my ideas of how the game should be played and how I see a team playing. I don't think that necessarily meant I knew I was going to be a coach, but I wanted to get my ideas down. I wanted to take information in. I thought that was important for me to continue to learn the game of soccer.
Yeah, I think this is something you can relate to. When you were back in Southern California, sometimes you and I would watch these games, and we would just talk sports. We would just talk about other games, other matchups. And when I do this show, even to this day, Greg, the one thing that keeps coming up over and over again is culture. Every coach in every sport talks about culture and identity. And in some ways, I would imagine for what you're doing right now, it's got to be trickier with the national team because you've got guys, but you won't have them week in and week out. And there's going to be gaps when they go back to their club teams. So how do you go about identifying or developing a culture and an identity?
No, that's exactly right, Jim. That is a challenge of the national team. You don't have the players every day. I think, you know, one thing I've learned about creating a culture is consistency of the messaging. You know, the staff really needs to embody the culture. It really needs to start within the staff. And then you need to be consistent with the messages. The players need to continue to be reinforced with the proper behavior and what you want to embody as a group. So that is something I've thought about. And, you know, it's also conversations with the guys outside of camp. It's as many contact points as you can get throughout the year.
All right, so when people think of the men's national team under Greg Berhalter, what do you want them to think of first? How is this team going to play?
So the first thing I want a team that's going to compete. You know, you have enough experience with high-level sports that you know competing is you know, three-quarters of the battle. But then I want us to be prepared. I want us to have a distinct playing style that is identifiable when you turn on the TV. And I want us to be an attacking team and an attractive team to watch. You know, I believe in the talent of these guys. And I think, you know, America wants nothing more to be proud of their team and see a team that can hurt other teams and play good soccer.
We're talking to Greg Berhalter for a few more moments. All right, what about America? What about the sport and where things stand right now? One of the things that you did as part of the interview process was talk about where U.S. soccer stands in the world right now. Where do you see the U.S. standing? And then how do you go about addressing and improving that?
So, you know, we took a step back, a little step back by not qualifying, but that doesn't mean, you know, we can't get back to where we belong. I think there's a bright future in our youth. When I look at the team right now, it's a young team. When I look at the players coming up in the academy systems and the youth soccer leagues, you know, it's really improving. We have a diverse athlete group that's competing right now. And, you know, what I see is that we're going to be back to where we belong. You know, it is a good generation, and I think we can get there.
Greg Berhalter is my guest. You know, Greg, when you look at what you have here, left back is a spot that always gets talked about, especially as it relates to depth. So when you look at the challenges that come along with this job and this team, what do you focus on the most?
So, you know, that is a concern, that position. I think we have a couple veterans who can fill that role right now. We have a player or two coming through the youth ranks that are very young that can fill that role. But, you know, the way I see it is the strength of our team, Jim, is going to be in the collective. We're going to hopefully be able to accommodate for a weak link. But, you know, the idea is to develop everyone on the team and become a better team.
And then finally, in terms of development, it's got to happen pretty quickly because you've got a camp next month ahead of friendlies against Panama in late January, Costa Rica in early February. I know you know that. So what are you looking to accomplish in that first camp, which is expected to be mostly domestic players?
Yeah, so that will be a domestic group, and it will be, you know, setting the foundation for who we want to be as a team. So it will be team building, team cohesion, but also style of play. You know, that's going to be really important, getting the players up to speed with how we want to play. and we'll focus a lot on that, and then we'll get to test it in two games against Panama and Costa Rica.
All right, on a less serious note, the hack-off. The hack-off is still a thing. And a lot of you are still trying to bring this thing back. And I said, you know, I don't think it still works in 2018, 2019. But if you think that it can work, why don't you let me know who you think the field would be? And then sure enough, on Twitter, they came. TweetDeck was popping. And there were eight people that you proposed. The top eight candidates. Seven of them quickly RSVP'd. They weren't offended. They didn't take offense. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm all about it. Let's do this thing. Josh in Detroit, Matt in L.A., Parody Larry, Lauren in Naples, Andy in Rockland, Dr. Dave in Chicago, Rex in the ABQ. Those seven immediately RSVP'd yes. The only guy who did not was the hypothetical three seed, Jeff in San Antonio, which prompted a call from one of the other guys who did RSVP. Parody Larry not only prompted a call from Parody Larry, but it was one of his better calls in recent memory.
Jim, this is Jim in San Antonio. I'd love to be the hack-off. I'm a badass. And please, everyone, buy my baby Jordan diapers. They're already pre-soaked.
Buy my baby Jordan diapers. They're already pre-soaked. Right, so Larry made that phone call because I made the point that Jeff in San Antonio was the only guy who did not RSVP, so Parody Larry did a parody of Jeff in San Antonio. There you have it. So I'm still waiting on Jeff, and when he talked about the baby Jordan line, the reason he did that was because he's got a baby named Jordan, and Jeff very seriously said on this show that he was reaching out to Mike to propose something, that you have the brand Jordan, but he needed a baby Jordan brand. And Jeff was serious. Jeff's like, I'm going to make a hell of a lot of money doing this, Rome. And then we'll see who gets the last laugh. Anyway, I've been waiting on that one last RSVP for the hack-off. Remember, the hack-off. The smack-off represents the best of the best. The hack-off is for the worst of the worst. The other seven not only took it in stride, but embraced it. They want in. Here he is, finally, the hypothetical three. This would make it eight. I'm looking for the RSVP, Jeff in San Antonio. His first call since the call where he said he was trying to effort Mike for the baby Jordan brand. He has not RSVP'd. I'm hoping that's what this is. Jeff, what's going on? Good to have you.
Yeah. Happy holidays, Jim. Glad to see you're doing well. First of all, if I did decide to show up at the hack off, I'd probably be like the 1,000th seed because, dude, I am way above that. I'm smack off material. I'm not hack off material. So I will not be attending, nor will I be listening. And Larry, Parody, whatever that dude's name is, he needs to keep my name out his mouth for sure. On a more serious note, yeah, babyjordan.com is ours. We're going to be launching it. And we just got to decide between February 3rd or April 5th. So, hey, Jim, I appreciate everything. You've been just awesome to me and my family. And
Jeff, I got to ask you, is that baby Jordan in the background?
It sure enough is, Jim. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings, and her pterodactylness is coming out. So
oh, hell yes.
Literally carrying the sound across the restaurant.
Love it.
So, yeah, I'm not going to be showing
Dude,
up.
Dude, if you're at Buffalo Wild Wings, you sound like you're on a hard line. Did you go to the restaurant and say, I need to use your phone?
Yeah, and I've been waiting on hold for like 10 minutes. I don't really care, you know? I mean, I've used the phone in a hospital.
Dude, you are.
I am who I am. I'm definitely a badass. And the jungle can thank me anytime for bringing back Jeff in Richmond. I'm out.
You got it. All right. All right, a few things right there. He literally just said it before I could say it myself. He was at a Buffalo Wild Wings. That makes him a badass. Seriously, I love Buffalo Wild Wings. Very important partner of ours on this program. And can I tell you something else? I'm going to be at a Buffalo Wild Wings next weekend. I'll tell you more about that. He's a badass for being there. He's a badass for getting on a hard line at a Buffalo Wild Wings. He's a badass for getting on a hard line in the hospital while his fiance was giving birth to the now legendary Baby Jordan. He's a badass for apparently bringing Jeff in Richmond back to the jungle. But my man said, I'm not going to be a 3 seed because I'll be a 1,000th seed because I'm no hack. I will not be participating. I will not be listening because I am smack off material. Jeff, you know I got your back. Even if nobody other than me, Baby Jordan, and your fiance do. Broham, if anything, that call moved you up from the 3 seed to the 1 seed. That was so great. He just said it. Oh, I'm not listening that day, much less participating, because I'm not a hack. I'm a guy who can win your smack off. All right, your reaction to it. And he says that he's right on track, that they already own babyjordan.com. And now it's just a matter of whether or not they, what did he say, release it? Approach Mike on February 3rd or April 5th? I don't know, man. He's doing business. He's doing business. Orion escaped Waterford. He tweets, keep crying, baby. Jeremy and Scotty tweets, bleep this guy. Hey, haters gonna hate. Hey, Jeff, you know that, right? Haters gonna hate. Especially when you're somebody. Especially when you've got a good business idea. Especially when you're confident. Especially when you've got game. Game respects game, but haters gonna hate. You gotta know that.
Definitely a badass.
You are definitely a badass, bro. Stephen Crowtown tweets, Jeff is smack off material? Does he have his wife's permission to be in the competition? Reginald Merriweather III is back. Oh, God, yes. Shoot Jeff's tone of voice directly into my veins. I don't know how you do that, Reginald. I don't know how you can inject somebody's tone of voice into your veins. I could see where you'd want to. I'm just not sure how you do that. Squirrel2 tweets, was that Baby Jordan in the background crying? Or is that Jeff on the set of the newest Jurassic Park movie? I said to him in the middle of the call, hey, Jeff, is that Baby Jordan? He said, yes, it is. She is wailing across the entire restaurant with that pterodactyl pipe already. Roger Bland 13 tweets, Jeff in San Antonio seems like more of a Tony Kukoc guy instead of a Jordan guy.
I'd probably be like the 1,000th seed.
I'd probably be like the 1,000th seed. Do you see what he did there?
Dude, like, I am way above that.
Like, the higher the seed in the hack-off, the worse you are. So I said he was a hypothetical 3. He said, yeah, I'm more like 1,000. Because I could never win that because I'm such a badass.
Dude, I am way above that.
Dude, you are. Hey, preach. You don't need to tell me that, Jeff. Preach. M. Piazza's back knee. That's this guy's Twitter handle. M. Piazza's back knee. I do not think I have hated anybody more than I hate Jeff in San Antonio. He is exactly what I don't like in a person. Hedstrom Bacon tweets, apparently Jeff in San Antonio is one of those bags that allows his kid to wail like a siren in a restaurant, disturbing the rest of the clients. Jeff, you are so good. Dude, you are team content. You are a badass. Kristen KC tweets, let me get this straight. That badass Jeff abandoned his kid for 20 minutes in a, quote, restaurant to go to a hardline phone. Embrace that fatherhood, Jeff. Bro, Chris, I'm not going to tell you how to raise your kids because I don't want you to tell me how to raise my kids. Man, don't come at this guy like he's a bad dad. Have you heard him on the show? The guy broke into tears before the kid was even born. He's like the best dad. Bad dad. If by bad dad you mean the best dad ever, the guy was crying on national radio like at the 6 month mark. Come on, man. He didn't abandon his kid. I guarantee baby Jordan was with the fiance or one of the waitresses.
Keep my name out his mouth.
God, they just keep coming. I can't read them as quickly as they hit tweet deck. Rich Micklebus tweets, why does Jeff sound like he's going to lose his fragile mind every time? Freaking unbelievable. Is he really a grown-ass man? Yet that and a badass.
And the Jungle can thank me anytime for bringing back Jeff in Richmond.
Brother, thank you for doing that. Hey, Jeff, thanks for everything. Stay strong, bro. I got you. I've got Joe Montana coming up later on this hour. But as promised, right now we are talking Clipper basketball. I'm joined by a forward for the Clippers. He is having a big, big season. 21 points, nearly 9 rebounds per game this year. The Western Conference Player of the Month for November. You might recall he was an SEC All-Freshman at Tennessee. He was the 19th pick overall in 2011. Also, Miami is at LA tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Tobias Harris is my guest. Tobias, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to be back.
Thank you. It's great to have you back. All right, so you dropped a tough one to Memphis on Wednesday night, but overall, the team has gotten off to a tremendous start. When did you first start thinking that this group might have something special in it?
Well, I knew during training camp we had some really good chemistry, and you know, just to see all the pieces come together. And we competed hard during the training camp time, and we were able to really get off to a good start in the preseason. And that's when I kind of saw the potential for our team. And we've just been fueling off the chemistry and continuing to, like, every single night play as hard as we can. So that's been working out well for us. And the best thing about our team is that we're not content. We want to continue to get better and continue to move forward.
Tobias Harris joining us. You know, when you mentioned chemistry, in an era of super teams, this is a team that does not necessarily have a superstar, and in fact has a number of guys who came to L.A. when superstars were traded away. So is there a feeling maybe in the locker room that you've got a bunch of guys who may have been overlooked, maybe even disrespected, and do they use it as motivation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, regardless of guys being overlooked or disrespected, just guys who are hungry to prove to themselves and prove to others and prove to everyone in the locker room that they can help a team and help our team be the best team that we can be. So we have a lot of guys who are, you know, selfless and just going out and playing for one another and, you know, playing to win the game and playing basketball the right way with great pace and great chemistry. So that's the type of identity of a team we have. And we have a lot of good players and guys who can a lot of depth on this team of different guys who can contribute. So I think our depth is one of the best things about our team.
Tobias Harris joining us. You know, your depth, and also I'm glad you mentioned pace, because your teammate Montrezl Harrell has said, quote, when you come to play for the Clippers, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to be fatigued. You're going to be emotionally drained, end of quote. Mike Scott, though, put it more succinctly. He said, and I quote, we ain't no bitches. How would you describe, it's an amazing quote. How would you describe the attitude of the team?
It's a tough team. Tough-minded guys, guys who have all been in, or are all at the stage of their careers where they want to, you know, prove to themselves and everybody around the league that we're winners. And when you look at this group and every single night that you play against us, you know you're getting a team that's going to come at you for the whole game. And, you know, I would describe it just as being tough, being mentally tough, physically tough, and a team that, you know, gets it done just execution-wise.
Tobias Harris joining us once again. You know, Doc Rivers said something I think, Tobias, it's amazing. He said this about you. He said the way you process scouting reports and film and everything that the coaches give to you reminds him of Kevin Garnett. I mean, that's like the highest praise imaginable, because when you think about preparation and knowing the game, there aren't very many guys better than KG. So what's it mean to you to hear that from Doc?
That means a lot. And for me, that just is a testament to the seriousness that I bring into the game. And, you know, everything that I do in my life, I'm going to be organized, I'm going to be prepared. And I love going into every single game, embracing the new challenge of playing against a new team, and just embracing the challenge of doing whatever I can to help my team win. And that's what I pride myself on. I pride myself on that, on the basketball court and outside of the basketball court. And that's a very high praise, especially to be compared to a guy in that respect of Kevin Garnett. That means a lot.
Yeah, I want to finish that thought and have another story, another angle about that. You and I have talked in the past about your offseason workouts, but there's a story from Clippers assistant John Welch that is pretty amazing to me. Normally, he sends every player into the offseason with a list of things to work on. Instead, you gave him an itinerary of every workout that you'd be doing when he dropped in on you in Garden City, New York. And then when he showed up, it wasn't just you working out. There were sessions where it was you, your siblings, and your parents working out. I mean, what were those sessions like?
Well, you know, everybody, my siblings, we all play at a high level. You know, I have a brother who plays in Japan. My other younger brother plays at in the collegiate level, Division I, and my younger sister, too. So when we're working out, it's, you know, doing the exact same thing I'm doing. It's basketball training, you know, weight training, conditioning. And those are, you know, really, really tough and intense workouts. And then my parents, when we do the weight training and the condition, they come along and do the conditioning with us. So we keep it in the family. We push each other as a family. And we want to, you know, just like my parents, they're older, but at the end of the day, I want them to be healthy too. So it's about lifestyle, you know. A lot of it's basketball, but at the end of the day, it's just about the lifestyle of bettering yourself and trying to be the best you. And, you know, we enjoy each other's company and being around each other. And that's our really close family. I wouldn't be where I'm at today without my family. And it's just us embracing each other, and it's a lot of fun.
Dude, can I say, the Harris family is amazing. I mean, I would think that, like, when you grind the way you grind, that when you want to get back with your family, maybe you want to get away from it all, it sounds like you double down, you triple down. Like, as far as the LA Times says, that sometimes you work out three times a day when you're back in Long Island with the family, right? So you're not looking for time off. If anything, you're putting more time in, and the whole family is too.
Yeah, and then that's what I really pride my growth as a player on, is being able to go into the off season with a great focus of how to get better, how to improve my game. I mean, you know, every single year I've taken another step on my game, and you know, I'm still only 26 years old, and I look to take more leaps in my game. So every summer when I get those 3.5 months to really grind and really get better, that's a chance for me to, you know, get a lot of work done on my basketball game and my body, physically and mentally. So that's why I love the off season.
Tobias Harris joining us. All right, so now you're also the co-host of the Bobby and Toby show with your teammate, Bobby. And the relationship you two guys have, to me, is amazing. It's one of the coolest things in the NBA, as evidenced by that amazing dance video from a while back. But when you first met his teammates in Detroit, what did he say to you initially? What was it like when the two of you first met?
Well, when he first met me, you know, it was after, like, one of the workouts we had as a team in Detroit, and he was just like, you know, I really didn't like you when I first met you. Like, that's what he tells me, from, like, playing
crazy
against me and things like that. But then he's like, I think we're going to be good friends. And I was like, dang, straight up. So that was funny, because I think that was, like, the reason why it built a friendship. So, like, every day that I see him after, I was like, oh, this guy doesn't like me. You know what I mean? But then as we continue to be around each other, continue to, you know, there'd be times on the road we used to go out and eat dinner. We had a close team in Detroit, so we had some good times, and we were always in the weight room. And it's just a friendship that came about, and especially when we got traded, it was a friendship that was just led on even more. So he's an amazing player, amazing person. Everybody that's around Boban knows, you know, he's a great guy. People always want to be around him, so he's a fun guy to be around.
You know, I was just going to ask you that, because you and I have talked a number of times over the years, so I think people listening have a good sense of who you are. But what about Boban? For those who don't know, how would you describe him? What's he like?
I would say he's one of the funniest guys you ever meet. That's number one. And one of the you know, most caring guys that you ever meet. Like, he never wants anybody to feel, you know, he never wants anybody to be sad, never wants anybody to be upset. He cares about other people's feelings a lot, you know, more so than anything. And he's just a great guy to be around. He's never a bad day with him. There's some days where, you know, I'll come in, I may be a little tired, and he'll just be like, "Oh, you're not the same today. You're not you today." And I was like, "No, I'm just a little tired." And then, you know, but he always brings the life out of anybody, and he's just an amazing teammate too.
All right, so one last thought. I mean, he's funny then. He's kind, but you kind of forget, man. Dude can ball. Like the other night against Memphis, he had 19 points. He had 8 rebounds. He did this in 13 minutes. Pat Beverly said after the game that he's a cheat code. So how would you go about stopping Boban if you had to?
Honestly, like we've had practices and times where we play one-on-one in the post and things like that, and the best thing you have to do is just foul him because he's too tall and he's really strong too. So when he gets on the court, he's a problem. I mean, he's an instant bucket for us. He can pass the ball, he can shoot the ball. So my best advice is to foul him.
We are efforting Joe Montana. We have found Joe Montana. He is a 4-time Super Bowl champ, a 3-time Super Bowl MVP, an 8-time Pro Bowl selection, a member of the 1980s All-Decade Team, a member of the NFL's 75th Anniversary Team, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Today he appears courtesy of the Fan-Controlled Football League, or the FCFL. My guest is Joe Montana. Joe, it's good to have you on. How are you, Joe?
Hey, good, Roy. How you doing?
Good, good. How about you, Joe? How are things?
They're good, man. I've been checking you out, listening to your talk about your Peloton workouts and how you like that thing. We got one of those.
I love that thing, Joe. You about that life? What do you think about Peloton? I love it.
I'm on the easy side. If you're hitting 45 minutes, you're a beast like my wife. She kills it on that machine every day.
Joe.
I just go for a cruise.
Dude, that's amazing. You even know my routine. So the wife does 40. Does the wife do 45? What do you do? Are you like a 30-minute guy or what?
She goes up and down depending on her time. She's got stamina like you've never seen before. So she could go hour if she wanted. She usually is 30, 40, 45 minutes.
She's hardcore. I love it. I appreciate that, Joe. Thanks for saying so. Listen, you've been active, Joe, in venture capital. I want to start right there. In venture capital for quite some time. I want to talk to you about your investment in the FCFL in a moment. But what about investing? When did you first get involved in investing?
Well, when I first retired, Ronnie Lott and Harris Barton and I got involved, and we started a fund of funds in top-tier venture firms. Like we basically leveraged our friendships to get into the places like Sequoia Capital, Kleiner Perkins, Excel, all the top-tier funds. And then those guys helped us get into top leverage buyout funds, top-tier hedge and top-tier real estate funds. And I backed away when the boys started playing sports. We had about $900 million under management. And as my older son graduated from college, reconnected with a good friend, Ron Conway, from SB Angel, who started taking Nathaniel and I to this incubator out here called Y Combinator. We did a couple little investments here and there together, and Ron talked and starting a fund, and off we went. We're raising a second fund, and we're just having a lot of fun with it. A lot of work, but I've got a bunch of good partners. But it's fun seeing all the new technology. It's a lot of interesting to see where the world's headed.
You bet. We're talking to Joe Montana. One more thing about that. What's the biggest challenge that you've encountered in venture capital, Joe? For instance, is it the investments themselves, or maybe is it figuring out who and what you can trust?
Yeah, we invest real early. We're in the seed stage or earlier, so we put a lot of trust in three probably top areas. One, and most important, are the founders. You have to put a lot of trust in them and a lot of belief, and you look for second and third time founders, but in the beginning, you have to really believe in the people that you're investing in. And one of the other things is market size. You know, you can't have a billion-dollar company if you don't have a billion-dollar market. So we look for market size, and probably third of all is you know, what they're toting, whether it's a product or a SaaS company. It doesn't really matter what it is. We just have to believe that if something goes wrong, that those two founders or three founders, whatever it might be, can handle that pressure and be able to make a switch and try to do what's best for the company. And it's fun meeting people. We get to meet a lot of people. We see a lot of deals go by, and it's been fun. We have a couple billion-dollar valuations in our portfolio, and we're off and running.
Good. We're talking to Joe Montana. So, Joe, we're into week 14 of the NFL season, and there are 5 quarterbacks with more than 3,500 passing yards. When you get a chance to watch games these days, who are the quarterbacks or players that you like to watch?
Well, you know, the ones you always want to watch are probably the guys on the top. You know, I don't see Drew Brees much, but I do like to watch when he's around. Obviously, you see Tom's on a lot. I like watching Roethlisberger. Obviously, the kid in Kansas City is having a tremendous year. And Goff, he's another up-and-coming young guy that's having a tremendous year also. So I like watching the young guys, too, the new guys coming into the league. I like trying to watch Baker Mayfield and the guys in Buffalo and, the four or five guys that came out this year, just to see how they make that transition. Transition's hard, very difficult to make.
We're talking to Joe Montana. Joe, you mentioned Tom. So Tom Brady's made it pretty clear over the years that you're in a league of your own, and he disagrees when people say that he's the best of all time. What do you make of the comparisons between you and Tom Brady, or really you and anybody?
Well, it's great to be compared to Tom. Tom's having a tremendous career, and it's going to continue for a while. And, you know, I think it's always, you know, I've always said this, and, you know, I've said it to you a number of times. It's really hard to compare guys. And go back and look at, I always say this, look at Sammy Baugh and Otto Graham and look at the things they accomplished back then. I keep forgetting which one of them won like 10 or 11 championships. And, you know, how do you compare those guys to me, levels, those guys to Tom or anybody playing today? The game's changed. It's always changing. It's ever evolving. If you go back and look at what they did to wide receivers back when those guys played, oh, my gosh, even right before I got in the league. The things you could do to a wideout as he comes off the ball was crazy. Now, the people want to see the ball thrown, and that's a big part of the game. So they want to give the fans what they want to see, and that's why you're seeing all these numbers get put up there.
I mean, Joe, you love the game. You love the game as much as anybody, but is there any part of you that wonders, and you can't control, of course, when you play the game, but any part of you wonder what kind of numbers and how much fun you would have had with these more offensive-friendly rules that we have right now?
If I said no, you know I'd be lying, because as a competitor, you just want to play no matter what the game is, when it was, whether it was before me, after me, or even now. Yeah, now is a lot of fun for those guys. I mean, look at being as a quarterback, you want to throw the football, and that's just it. I mean, yeah, it's fun if you have a great running back and handoff, and most teams, you got to run the ball to be able to win. But dang, as a quarterback, when you get a run play call, it's like, dang. Oh, man, like, how can I change this? Hopefully, give me a defense. I can change. I can audible out of here. But, yeah, it'd be fun. Obviously, everybody says it'd be fun to play today. Like I said, the guys before me said it'd be fun to play when I was playing. So the game is just, unfortunately, it's very physical, and it takes its toll on the guys. But it's a fun game to watch and have been a part of.
We're spending a few more moments with Joe Montana. Joe, earlier this year, you spoke at the funeral of your teammate and good friend Dwight Clark, and you told a number of stories about him, but there was one especially powerful story when he asked you if you would speak at his funeral, and as you said, you looked into his eyes and you realized that he was serious. I'm curious, what was that moment like for you?
Oh, it was tough. You know, we came into the league together and been close friends since then. We were roommates, and it's really, the disease is just a monster to watch happen, and it happens so fast. Even with the medications that are out there to try to slow it down, it still goes way faster than you can believe. And to watch he was a big figure. He was a good-sized man, and to watch what it did to him and where he was in the end right before he passed away, it's just devastating. I mean, when he asked me that, I told him, get out of here. I mean, there's no way. We'll get through this. And he knew where it was headed. But it was a sad day. I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. And I tried to hold it back because I didn't want to have him, you know, he already has enough to go through. He doesn't have to worry about me being upset that was going to happen. But it was really sickening to watch. My wife and I we struggled hard with it. She had a really tough time with watching him go through that too.
Joe, it is the most devastating disease. It is so debilitating and so devastating and so tough to watch. You are the chief strategic advisor for the Fan-Controlled Football League. First off, what is the FCFL?
Well, I was approached by the guy, the founders of this a while back. And if you look at their proof of concept, when they took the team in Salt Lake and in the Arena Football League, and they let the fans get involved from the outside and be a part of the team by allowing them to pick the coach, pick the players, pick the plays that right before they're called. They have an opportunity to pick one of four plays, and it's almost like a game, right? To these, like a game that you would see on your laptop or your mobile device, where you're earning tokens. The more tokens you have, the more weight your vote has. And you earn your way up and down. And like any other game, if you wanted, you can buy those tokens to give yourself more weight quicker and faster. But it gives the fans really a chance to be a part of something. If you look at, you know, why a lot of the viewership is up from the NFL, I think it's from the fantasy leagues. People aren't watching their teams as much as they're watching their players. And now they have a chance to not only, you know, be able to pick those players like they do normally, but they can pick their own team and they can pick the plays and they can actually affect the game and outcome and be a part of that process of calling plays. I just think it's great. It's a 1 hour game live streamed on Twitch right now. And if you look at the partners between Twitch and IMG and a couple more that are going to be named here pretty soon, you'll see it's serious and the people behind it are serious and to make this thing something that's fun. I mean, here we are again, 7-on-7. Quarterback's dream, right? It's going to be all thrown and a lot of fun.
Never met a quarterback that didn't love 7-on-7. That's the FCFL, the Fan-Controlled Football League. Joe, it's great to get caught up, and I'm glad that you're with Peloton, too. I'm going to look for you on the leaderboard. Let's get that.
I'm not going to tell you my name because I'll never be on the leaderboard. I'll be on the bottom. If you see me down on the bottom, that's probably about where I'm at.
Joe, can I tell you something really quickly? It's kind of humbling, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you think you're going fast and people are blowing by. Wait, I thought I was doing pretty well. And then you look, I turned the leaderboard off now. I got it off the screen.
Just go to your age group, man. Just do your age group. It'll make you feel better. I do that sometimes. I just go to my age group. Joe, great to have you on, Joe. Great talking to you. Thanks
man,
so much.
Great to talk to you, man. Always fun.
You too, Joe. Always fun. Joe Montana. The GOAT. The GOAT. Joe Montana. That's so funny what he said about Peloton. I did not know that he was a Peloton guy. And it's true, man. It's tough. Like, I'm on that thing. I do 45. How he knew my drill, I have no idea. But you can do 45 minutes. You can do 60 minutes. You can do 90 minutes. You can do 30 minutes. You can do 20 minutes. I just kind of found my thing. My thing is 45 minutes. And I got another buddy of mine who's like, hey, bro, I know how competitive you are, man. You're like upper 10%, right? You're upper 5%. I'm not. It is humbling, man. It's hard. It's awesome, but it's hard. You go you against you. That's the way to go. All right, this guy wants a golden ticket bid. Never too soon to try. And again, my thanks to Joe Montana. Let's go to Cal in Vegas, trying to get the golden ticket, trying to lock it up before the end of the year. Cal, what's going on?
Hey, Jim, I can't believe you put me on hold for Joe Montana. Sparrow has no idea who that is. Jim, instead of telling Alvin to give me a golden ticket, you ask the knuckleheads on Twitter if I should get in. Don't get nervous. I'm so good I will silence all the haters. Right now, Alvin's got my golden ticket. He's holding it in his small hands. If you're tuning in on CBS Sportsnet, Alvin's that little horny guy that runs the soundboard. And Alvin gets a lot of action. It's because his woman can't resist his sexy jet black hair. Hey, Jim, it got back to me that little scrub Notch in Little Rock was talking trash about me. Of all the freaking people, Notch was so desperate to be my friend, he drove all the way out to Las Vegas just to have a drink with me. Man, Notch smells as filthy as he looks. Dude reeks of cheap marijuana and KY jelly. Man, I made Notch a house.
That's not a good car. No.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
Hawk, why do you look so surprised that he got run? Two things, Hawk. A reference to KY is probably going to get you run. And number two, Hawk, look at the guy with the jet black hair on the other side of you. The, quote, horny little guy on the board. What he says goes. If you can see through the flight deck's head to the guy on the other side with the jet black hair. Hawk's looking like, well, why'd you do that to him? Because he was going in on, quote, Notch. Denver Broncos linebacker Brandon Marshall is scheduled to join us. Broncos did not look like they were in a good way. And then all of a sudden they turned it on right when they had to. And they're right in the middle of this thing now. So Brandon Marshall is scheduled to join me momentarily. Not too late to get through. 1-800-636-8686. Maybe too late for me to start a whole new rant. So why not take a telephone call, which probably is not going to last that long anyway, right? How do I know that? Because on the other end of the line is Parody Larry. Hey, Lawrence, what's up?
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Jeff, I know that in San Antonio, you're known as the official town crier. But, dude, here in the jungle, you're just a garbage-ass, whiny little bitch. And the next time you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, let me give you some advice, dude. When you're on the phone on a landline with your hanky at the ready trying to talk to Jim, you can't leave your toddler pterodactyl rummaging around the restaurant while people throw chicken wings into a gaping pie hole. Put a leash on that little rugrat reptilian.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Name calling's not a take. Taking runs at babies is not a take. Come on, you're better than that, Larry. Larry, you're better than that. At least I thought you were. As promised, we're joined right now by a linebacker for the Denver Broncos. He is a Super Bowl champion. He was the 142nd pick in 2012 out of Nevada. Denver is back at 500, and they're at San Francisco on Sunday. That, of course, is a CBS game, 4:05 p.m. Eastern time. Brandon Marshall joins us. Brandon, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
Good, good, Brandon. Thanks. Listen, you guys were 3-6 not that long ago, and it seemed like nothing was going right, and there was talk in the organization that maybe there might be a move made at head coach. What was the mood like at that time?
Man, it was kind of everybody was kind of, I guess, I'm not gonna say down, but I would say that it was like a stress environment, you know. People's jobs on the line. You know, we didn't want it to be another year that we had a losing season. So, but everybody, you know, I don't think anybody blinked. You know, we just kept working, man. And we started off by beating two good teams. I'm glad we had that bye where we did. So, you know, it was a little stressful around here, but nobody blinked. Everybody kept working hard, and now we're winning.
Yeah, I respect that. That's a really honest answer, actually. Now, a number of the losses early in the season had been close, so it might have been easy for you guys to kind of give up and mail it in the rest of the way, but instead you turned it around, you won three straight, you're right back in the playoff hunt. Exactly what did change?
I can't even say what changed, to be honest. We kept doing the same things that we had been doing in the beginning of the season. You know, we had lost a lot of close games, and now we're winning those games. So I don't think anything drastic changed. Everybody just kept digging, kept fighting, kept working, and you know, it's paying off finally.
Broncos back to 500. They're 6-6. Brandon Marshall is my guest. Running back Philip Lindsay. Let me ask you about him. He had 157 yards, a couple of touchdowns in that win over Cincinnati on Sunday. You've been hyping this guy for a long time, even though he was undrafted. So, what did you see in him that let you know that he might have something like this in him, that he might be special?
Well, initially, I noticed his speed. I was like, okay, this guy's fast. And then I remember, like, the first day of training camp, he was out in empty, like an empty set, like a wide receiver, and I went to cover him. And then he did, like a stop-and-go route, and he beat me on the court touchdown. And I was like, yo, this kid is good. This kid is good, man. So I already knew that, you know, even from the beginning of camp, that he was going to be special. And look at him now.
Man, this dude is fast, too. Brandon Marshall joining us. He is fast. He is good. Now, you've been dealing with a little bit of a knee injury, and the thinking had been that you might test it out today to see if you can go on Sunday. How's the knee feeling right now?
I mean, I felt pretty good today. Today's the best I've felt in months, if I'm being honest. So, you know, hopefully they'll let me go. I think I can help the team. So, I'm ready to go.
Brandon Marshall joining us. Brandon, I'm curious about this. Like, if the culture is you want to play, you always want to play, you want to compete, yeah, you want to be out there, but you don't want to hurt the team, but your pride, you're always going to believe in yourself. How do you make that decision, whether or not you're helping or hurting?
That's tough, because at the same time, you don't want to put bad film out there. You know, you'll hurt yourself even more, you know, if, you know, you're out there playing bad. So I guess you got to be real with yourself. Be real with the coaches, and you know, and if you go out there, man, you can't think about it. You can't think about the injury. You got to just go play.
talking to Brandon Marshall of the Denver Broncos. You know, I had Joe Montana on the show about an hour ago, and I talked to him about how much the game has changed since he played and how much more difficult it is now for defensive players. You know, you've said that as a linebacker, you've got kind of an interesting line you have to walk because you have to be light and quick enough to drop into coverage, but you've got to have the size and the physicality to take on an offensive lineman and play the run. So how do you go about finding that balance? How can you do both?
You know, everybody's different. You know, you got your like Telvin Smith. You know, he's light, but, you know, he can do both. And, you know, everybody's got to find their weight, their strength, and I guess you got to know your skill set. You know, everybody's not a third down, a three down linebacker. You know, everybody's not. So I think you got to find that balance, man. And if you want to, you know, get paid like the top dogs, you got to be able to do it all. So, you know, you got to be strong in the weight room, but you still got to be quick and fast.
Listen, if you want to be paid like a top dog, you got to be able to take the top dogs down. Now, I wonder if you feel like there's a premium on players like you who can do both these things. For instance, if you can run with and cover Travis Kelce, but also you can bring down Todd Gurley, is there a premium to be paid if you can do both those things? Obviously so, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. You know, I remember when I got my extension, you know, when you talk to the people that, you know, handle money, the GM and stuff, they talk to you about your play percentage and if they see you as a three down linebacker or a two down linebacker, and everything they see you as, the pay will reflect it, and you know, and that's what he told me straight up, and I was, you know, I respected it. So you know, if you're only two down, man, you're not gonna get paid as much as the guys that play third down.
You're going to get paid for two downs. If you play three downs every time, you'll get paid for three downs.
Yeah.
Listen, Brandon, you're not a guy, you don't complain. I mean, you understand things for the way they are, and you do what you can to work within. Let me ask you this. I mean, the league is doing what it can to benefit offenses. We know this. I mean, people want to see offense. Do you ever see the pendulum changing or switching back? Can you ever see things moving back in favor of defenses, or is this the way it's going to be?
You know what? I hope it does. I hope it goes back. I will say this, though. You know, I know the ratings were down a little bit. So I think some of the rule changes, you know, geared towards offense, more points, more touchdown, more excitement. So I think that's why the numbers are through the roof right now. And, you know, they don't want to get the quarterbacks hurt. That's why they made that rule change, you know, because they want people to still watch and still want the contracts. And, you know, the viewership, everything, the people in the stands. So right now, it'll be like this for a minute. I just hope it'll be a shift at some point.
Talking to Brandon Marshall of the Broncos. Brandon, let me ask you this. As somebody who has spoken out about injustice, as somebody who knelt during the national anthem, I'm curious, what's your reaction when you see a team like Washington sign a player who was released after a second arrest for alleged domestic violence, but then not invite Colin Kaepernick to even try out when they need a quarterback? What's your reaction to that?
I was shocked, absolutely. You know, I was kind of just disgusted at first because I'm like, you know, this guy doesn't have a record. You know, he's never done anything wrong. He's, you know, played in the Super Bowl. He's won games, you know, in this league, and he's a proven winner. And nobody still signed him based on his beliefs. And, you know, kind of lets me know, you know, if you're outspoken about something that you really believe in, you know, that I guess that'll get you in the doghouse before committing any crimes. And I think it's a sad message that, you know, we're portraying, but it is what it is. I wish Cap would get a shot. And I'm not saying that I don't want Ruben to get a chance to play, because I think everybody deserves another chance, second chance. But where's Cap's second chance, you know? He's a model citizen. He's donated to all these organizations. He's been an upstanding citizen, and he doesn't get a second chance.
Brent, do you think he will? Do you think somebody will give him a shot?
You know, as the days go on, as the weeks go on, I think my belief is kind of getting smaller and smaller. You know, I still hope for him. I still think he will at some point, but it's just kind of fading when stuff like this happens.
You know, in terms of giving back. Last month, you were serving food at the Denver Rescue Mission as part of your program, Feel. And in October, you and the Broncos announced a $50,000 contribution to Feel. Take me back. How did Feel first come about?
Actually, I was presented the idea. This guy's name is Shahan, and he actually owns it's a like a conscious shopping website. It's called Shop Now to Fund, and you can go on this website and you can buy, you know, your daily toiletries, or you can buy a bunch of stuff. And 40% of the proceeds go to do good causes. You know, so you might go on and you might get some shoes, shirt, you know, you might need some lotion or anything. And 40% of all that will go to that, will go to whatever cause you choose. And so they knew I had a foundation, which is a mentorship program. It's called the Williams Marshall Cares program. So I was like, okay, yeah, we could definitely team up. I think this would be dope. And then they, you know, kind of presented these ideas of these type of boxes that we want to distribute to low income families. And I love the idea. I love the idea. So a field box, and field stands for feed and educate to empower leaders. And it includes a month's worth of food, hygiene products, educational products. And so, you know, at $250, a low-income family can get this box. So I thought it was dope. So, you know, then I know that the Broncos had their social justice fund. So I pitched the idea for them. I was like, look, you know, this is what, you know, we came up with through Shop Now the Fund. And they bit. And it was perfect, man. And we're actually distributing the boxes on January 11th. You know, I was just truly appreciate that the Broncos they backed me, and I thought it was kind of dope that, you know, I could buy these my everyday things, you know, even some nice things, right? And then 40% will go to a car, so I can, you know, I could buy stuff and give back at the same time. So I think Shop Now to Fund is amazing. Its valuation actually went up. I think when I first started, you know, dealing with them, the valuation was around like $10 million as far as what the company's worth, and now it's like $84 million.
Hmm.
And I think that's special. That's special, and it shows to, you know, it shows what they're doing in the community, and they're also you're also getting your daily needs at the same time.
Albie, can you roll that thing? The week that was. Edited, engineered, produced, and directed by the kid with the jet black hair. Yeah. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A very good Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Nice to be here. All right, show is setting up very nicely. Coming off a nice weekend. Went to New York and back. Had a great time. Always have a great time on the NFL and CBS. In fact, did my first ever Tops hit as well. So it was a big weekend. Not the same old Chargers. The Pats do what they have to do. The Rams did what they had to do. Everybody gets a take.
Everybody gets a
take. The kick is off. The mark on the Packers.
I'm surprised you made it off the field before you got fired. I'm surprised you made it into the locker room without getting fired. I'm surprised you didn't walk in there and fire yourself. Arizona beat you, Mike. They're doing you a favor.
How sorry I am for my actions.
I know you don't want to talk about Kareem Hunt. I know you don't want to talk about another player accused of domestic violence. Just because you don't want to doesn't mean we won't. Because we will, and we have to.
And it's a fake. Take
you know, you can say that was ill-advised. I'm just going to say that was moronic. That was a desperate play and a desperate move that they did not need to make. How about a minute now for you Ohio State fans? You cannot have that bad of a loss and try to argue that you're one of the four best. You're not. Game, set, match, sit down, shut up. Dennis Dodd joining us.
That Purdue loss hung around their neck like a stinky roll of cheese.
Wow, he got up!
Kevin Ioli.
Tyson Fury pops up like the Undertaker. I mean, it was an incredible fight. Boxing was the big winner on Saturday night.
Ray, what's going on?
What's up, buddy? Am I on?
What's up, Ray?
I'm sorry, Romy. I couldn't hear you there for a second, buddy. What's going on?
emailed.
Run that bum. Mark, Louisiana.
I'm thinking of the big horse today. 3 years ago today, we lost the greatest.
You're talking about Shared Belief, right, Mark?
Yes, sir.
Shared Belief has
the greatest that ever walked on a track.
Is this it for your football career?
That's a complicated question.
But, Herb, if you're really feeling that crappy all the time to the point where you have to fake a brain cyst, to evaluate your medical status.
You shag card toting bag. Keep OSU out your mouth.
The special teams played pretty good tonight, but defensively, we got
to
play better.
The upside is at least you're paying a quarter of a mil to a guy who you claimed after he was arrested for domestic violence for the second time this year. So you got that going for you. Mark Few.
Kids are doing great. Marcy's doing great. So no complaints. But you know what? We're waiting anxiously for the Rome Christmas card to make its way up here. That's kind of a highlight.
How can I help you? And I said, I'll take it. Rack me, Jim.
Time to ride off into the sunset.
Oh,
got you back to work.
Psych. My man's got jokes.
Okay, thank you.
No, Hood, thank you.
I believe I will not coach again.
It's not I'm not coaching again. That's not I've had an amazing run. That's not, oh, I'm done.
Are you fairly certain?
Yeah, I believe he will coach again, and I'm fairly certain about that. Nate Oates joining us.
Did a little homework, Jim. I think it's been a little while since I told somebody those 3 H's. You got to stay healthy. I think you got to be hungry, and let's do it with a sense of humility.
Emailed.
I'm a big fan of the 3 H's, too. Hungry, hungry, and hungry. Signed, Kelvin, Binge on Burgers, and Fries and Milkshakes at Mayo. Remember when Dr. James Naismith called me and said, as I was nailing that peach basket, I used to listen to you, Rome. Man, you were funny. I got a phone call once from a Neanderthal. This Neanderthal's like, yo, Van Smack, me and the other cavemen used to listen to you. We were trying to figure out how to make a fire.
Hip, hip, hooray!
Hip, hip, hooray? In 08? Get the guys around. Ready, ready. Hey, everybody be quiet. 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? Cowboys, Cowboys, yeah! 19 years in the NBA, Jamal Crawford.
There's a glow around Michael Jordan that you can't even explain. I've never seen it with anybody else. He'd wear a yellow Jordan outfit, and outside he'd have a yellow Ferrari to match. He's the star that gets the star starstruck.
I can't help but think he's looking down from heaven. He's pleased to hear this news.
Janice, I don't know for certain, but I can't help but think that he's not. Probably you should keep his name out your mouth. Andrew, nice to have you on. How are you?
A little sick, so, you know, I'm struggling here at work, but making it, you know.
Right. Yeah, I see you working there. When I ask you how you are, I kind of don't care. Remember when Andre Rison was waiting for a call from the NFL Hall of Fame and it didn't come? So he put himself in his own Hall of Fame? Stronger than his ex burning his house to the ground. That's way past personal. You're right.
Friday night, it's going to have Brad and Corona.
Unwar all my fanboys on Twitter. Go away. I don't like you.
Henry is not
going to
stop.
That's about as good a run as you're ever going to see against about as disappointing a team as you're ever going to see. Greg Berhalter.
The way I see it is with the strength of our team, Jim is going to be in the collective. Develop everyone on the team and become a better team.
Tobias Harris is my guest. So how would you go about stopping Boban if you had to?
My best advice is to foul.
Jeff, what's going on? Good to have you.
If I did decide to show up at the hack off, I'd probably be like the 1,000th seed because, dude, I am way above that. I am who I am. I'm definitely a badass.
Joe Montana.
Listening to your talk about your Peloton workout, how you like that thing.
I love it.
I'm on the easy side. If you're hitting 45 minutes, you're a beast like my wife. She kills it on that machine every day.
Alvin's that little horny guy that runs the soundboard. Alvin gets a lot of action because his woman can't resist his sexy jet black hair.
Hashtag laughing for 20 months while you were making toilet wine in the can.
Thick skin in here, huh?
Hump fist.
We'll go down there and make him choke.
I'll catch you, guaranteed.
Fucking dude, thanks for having me.
We'll see you Wednesday.
February 3rd.
Thanks for the Vine Roman.
Call it Incredimate.
Hey.
Drive safe, all you out there.
Or April 5th. Rack me.
I'm out.
Now I'm done, Alvy.
Good night now.
Love that segment. I have loved that segment ever since it debuted. Flight deck's in. Flight deck is out. Dear Rome. Oh. Jesus? Is the only one that can handle your junk, Hugh? Weird. Yours, escorts. You know, there's like 5 million of those. But I thought I'd read one. Aaron in Omaha. You're welcome.
Omaha!
War LeBron being found innocent in the steak knife mystery. Again, I don't think that LeBron ever asked anybody to cut his steak for him.
Cut that meat.
I think that's also an urban legend.